Do you want to start this thing? This is episode 10.
Double digits.
Double digits. 1-0. Martin had a dream. Martin had a dream. Kendrick have a dream. Welcome to episode 10 of the RVU Ram News VCU Basketball Podcast. This is the 10th episode, double digits. I think it makes us more real. Wouldn't you say, Aaron?
I would say so. I'm Aaron Williams.
I'm Ross Catro. Today, we're going to talk about Fordham briefly. We're going to talk about that epic Richmond game, which was just awesome to be at. We'll do a little bit of trivia. We'll talk about A-10 conference standings. And then look ahead to a really compact week of VCU basketball with Rhode Island and St. Joe's. So let's start with VCU versus Fordham, part one of the battle for the Ram's Horn.
Part one of three, not including the A-10 tournament. It was just one of those games. But a couple of significant things happened. Travion Graham hurt his toe. Didn't really get to play the second half. It looked like Tarrant Channing was going to play. He was out there warming up, and then he didn't. But the Rams found a way to win, despite Havoc not necessarily having its most effective performance of the season.
Yeah, and you should, if you haven't seen them yet, we have great pictures up on RVA News of basically the moment that Graham was injured. And there's some really good pictures. I mean, good, but there's some good pictures of him like sitting on the bench, clutching his toe, which just turned out to be a sprained toe.
Sprained big toe, yeah. And he ended up playing in the Richmond game.
He started the Richmond game.
Right, yeah. And but I think, you know, not necessarily when he's on the court, but when he's walking around off the court, you could tell he's walking a little gingerly, mm-hmm. or walking on a little gingerly. But, you know, it's a couple of storylines that are common with everything that's going on right now. Rams are doing a pretty good job of scoring the basketball. They were able to get stops in the half court, and they did a really, really good job slowing down the combo of Brendan Frazier and John Sevier. John Sevier, who averages 22 points per game, finished with only 9 on 3 of 13 shooting. And Brendan Frazier, who averages, I believe, 17 or 18 points per game, finished with 4 points on 2 of 10 shooting. But Mandell Thomas went off and scored 25 points, albeit somewhat inefficiently.
And he was 5 of 10 from range, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Which the Rams have been good at defending this year. And I can't remember if those were kind of garbage time or not.
Well, I mean...
But either way.
Yeah. The Rams, VCU led almost the entire way, so...
Yeah. And this was not one to add to the chart of close halftime scores. I think at the half, it was 40-23. Wasn't ever really in doubt at all. And not that ever a game in the Siegel Center is boring, but...
you know, but it is interesting because it's two games in a row, if we want to keep making tables for the scoring. Two games in a row, they held the opponent to 23 at halftime.
Yeah.
And then the opponent started getting things going. So Fordham, which is a very good offensive team, they're terrible defensively, scored 37 points in the second half. But by that point, you know, you had Doug Brooks and Jarius Lyles. We even had an Emerson Burke sighting.
Yeah.
So...
Who gets a standing ovation every time he comes on the court? Every single time.
I feel a little, ovation. You know, not that I have hierarchies for players, but, you know, Torrey Burson's been on the team a little longer. And
yeah.
It bugs me a little when Torrey Burson's not even on the court and people are giving Emerson a chance. I love it. Ram Nation's pretty good at picking up on, like, little things, and
yeah.
They do a good job. So I think it's time to close the book on that one.
Yeah. So this Richmond game, it was nationally televised on the Deuce.
Yeah,
exactly. I think they call it that, the Deuce, ESPN2, and it was a weird 11 a.m. tip, but it didn't matter. It was maybe the best atmosphere I can remember in the Siegel Center recently. I remember the St. Joe's overtime game last year.
Well, the Butler game.
The Butler game, yeah. There's some
hot early tip.
This was out of control. It was loud, almost front to back. They did an amazing. If you weren't there, they did a moment of silence for, I don't know what the chair
is. People affected by cancer?
Yeah.
Oh, with the chair.
Is it Massey? Do you know? I can't remember.
That sounds right, yeah.
And they had put out on all the seats in Siegel Center, these yellow posters that were like, wreak havoc on cancer, fill in this blank with the name of someone you know that has been affected by cancer. And then before player introductions and before national anthem, I think, maybe after national anthem, but they had everyone hold up their sign and have a moment of silence. And it was incredible because the place was already rad. Like, the Peppos were playing. It was loud before the game even started. And then the whole place was just dead silent for, like, a good 15 seconds. And it was awesome. It was emotional. The place looked great in the blackout. Like,
agreed.
It was just really... And that was even before the game. Like, we haven't really gotten... Like, the game hadn't even started yet. And it was just... It was... I don't know what the word is. It felt like it was sizzling or, like...
It was frenzied.
Frenzied.
That's what Coach Smart called it after the game.
Yeah.
I guess he's trying to brand... He's already branded the style of basketball. Now he's trying to brand the VCU fans. Yeah. I've got no problem with that. I mean, it's definitely something that he deliberately did with the basketball. But it was an awesome game. It was awesome, like you said. And it was awesome before the game even started, and then ball gets tipped. VCU, you know, Briante Weber comes out and he gets three steals in the first four minutes or something like that to set the all-time VCU record, just really quickly. I didn't expect it to happen that quickly. And then Richmond sort of figured out the press. They just gave the ball to Kendall Anthony. And he just did it. They only turned the ball over twice in the second half, 9 times total. And I can't remember the exact stat, but 5 or 6 of those were in the first 6 minutes of the first half.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, VCU built this little lead. And then the two teams played pretty evenly from that point on. And, you know, I tip my horns to Kendall Anthony. Yeah. He scored 31 points while also basically single-handedly playing against the press the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the best individual performances I've ever seen in person. And Cedric Lindsay, who had a slow start to the game, he finished with 21 points and had an incredible game. So those two definitely scare me for the rematch on March 6th.
Yeah, I think if you look at the starters, or let me say this, I think the Spiders are kind of who we thought they were coming in. We knew Kendall Anthony and Cedric Lindsay were both very good at scoring the basketball, and they were. And they're both very good at handling the basketball. And then the kind of question marks were these other players and how much they would contribute. And the answer was not so much.
Yeah, so I thought Alonzo Nelson-Adeau looked brilliant the first, like, 6 or 7 minutes maybe until he picked up his second foul. He blocked 3 shots early on in the first half. There were 2 times where he got steals when they were trying to get the ball to Javonte Redick in the post where he... You know, stepped out in front of it and tapped it away. I thought he looked really, really good, but then he got into foul trouble, and then you could tell how frustrated he got. I mean, when he picked up his 4th foul, I thought for a moment that he was going to lose it and get a technical with the ref, but one of his teammates sort of came over and calmed him down. So that's something that kind of makes me nervous about the rematch, because not only will he's really good, he'll be really highly motivated, and he, you know, probably won't pick up 4 fouls in only 17 minutes of action.
Right.
And then I was also surprised at how little Derek Williams was involved.
Yeah. 0 points.
He only had 1 personal foul, and he was limited to 16 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and he was 0 of 3 from the field. He did take that 1 open 3-pointer, and I went, oh, don't let him do that. I mean, he can hit that shot. That's part of the thing that makes a 270-pound big man so scary, is that he can step out and shoot 3-pointers. But, you know, VCU's front court did a really, really good job just – erasing everyone other than the guards.
Yeah, Deion Taylor had 0 points.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Davis had 8.
Terry Allen had
2.
So
it was really, I mean, well, so it was 52 points out of the total.
70, yeah.
Were scored by Kendall Anthony and Cedric Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
Just a really great performance by those guys. They're really good.
Yeah, they're, you know... That team is just really they're designed really well to play against VCU.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that any team can come to Stew and only turn the ball over 9 times,
yeah,
that's really incredible. But it continues this trend of, you know, in the A-10, VCU hasn't been anywhere near as good at turning the ball over. I mean, they've played some... I mean, that's the thing about the A-10. It's really, really good guard play. You know, and these teams now have a little more experience playing against VCU. It comes with being in the same league for a while. But I really feel like Richmond is designed to give havoc problems, and they've done a really good job of it. and VCU's just found other ways to win.
Yeah, it was awesome. It's in the same way that UR was so top heavy, VCU was super balanced. I remember looking up at the scoreboard for like who the current lineup, and the score, like the points per lineup, was like one guy had 10, 11, 10, 11, 10, and then they all had three or four fouls.
So
everyone was getting involved, and we can talk about the fouls in a second, but like if you look at the final point totals, like
Weber had 14, Graham had 13, Brandenburg had 10, and a great dunk, which you don't see every day. Reddick had 11, Johnson had 14, Lewis had 11, and then Noelle Cox only played 13 minutes, had 6 on 3 or 4 shooting. Just great contributions from everyone. Even Jared Guest, who only played 8 minutes because of foul problems, had a great offensive rebound and a putback. That was an and one play as well. So that's what we expected from the Rams coming into the season, was just this incredible balance. Plus, they've got a couple guys who can take it over like they did in the LaSalle game. And that's a really dangerous combination to have on offense.
I have an animated GIF of that Rob Brandenburg dunk, by the way.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
It was awesome. Terrence Shannon played 4 minutes.
Yeah, he did.
And he looked good playing defense. He didn't really... I'm not even sure he picked up... Did he have a trillion? Did he pick up a stat?
He had a 4 trillion, which may be...
He had a 4 trillion, which is the...
3 trillion, I think, is the biggest I've seen this season for VCU. Wow.
So
4 trillion.
But that's cool. It's cool to see him back in the game. Mm-hmm. And he didn't look tentative or anything like that. He was all over the place, honestly.
And I think they probably had a game plan. You know, they said, like, we'll get him in there, and then, like, if it's a single-digit game, we feel like we need him, we'll play him or something like that. But VCU had a pretty good lead with the exception of one little moment in the second half where it got down to 6.
Yeah.
But most of the game, it was between 10 and 13 or 14 points. So they probably did that. And with Trayvon Graham, you could tell he started, but his minutes were very limited in the first half, and he played a lot more in the second half.
Yeah.
So they probably had a game plan with him, too, as to how to manage that.
Can you talk about the fouls? There were many, many fouls. I think there were 47 fouls this game. Does that sound right?
47 fouls. I mean, it got pretty frustrating. I think... You know, and this is something Coach Smart has talked about in the past. It's just frustrating, the inconsistency, even within one game, how it's called. So the Georgetown game was that way. It was called an entirely different way in the second half than it was the first half. And I felt a little bit of that this game. So many of the fouls happened 70 feet from the basket. They would give the ball to Kendall Anthony. He would just, you know, he'd be running by someone, and someone would hit, you know, not really bump into him, but, like, there would be contact.
Yeah.
And then it was, like, all these soft fouls, just one after the other. And it's really frustrating watching that many fouls 70 feet from the basket.
And that's the perfect way for Richmond to get back in the game, to have Seth Lindsay shoot free throws all day.
Yeah, to have Lindsay and Kendall Anthony shoot free throws. They had 21 attempts between the two of them. You know, but Richmond also had their fair trouble fouls, although for different reasons. You know, theirs were because VCU's big men were doing a really good job of getting in there and attacking the glass. Like, there was multiple and ones, you know, and it was stuff in the paint. Whereas VCU, it got really frustrating because I wish I had known how many of the fouls occurred more than 70 feet away from the basket, but it was a large portion of them. And they were almost all fouls on Kendall Anthony. I remember in the second half, at one point, people had fouled him 5 times. So
yeah.
It gets frustrating, but you have to adjust. But I'd like to see a little bit more consistent calling from game to game and within games, because the big question, and this is, you know, one of the national stories happening right now, is they made this big deal about how they're going to change the rules.
Yeah.
And then, like I thought was going to happen, like plenty of people way smarter than me thought was going to happen, you know, they eased off calling them, because you're not going to, that's not going to change the way the game is played. You can't just call more fouls.
Yeah.
And so people got sick of games with 60 fouls, and refs consciously or subconsciously started backing off and calling the games a little bit more physically, a little more loose. But now, you know, you never know what you're going to get going into a game.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, not good.
Especially
come March time. I think there's a lot of potential for people to be very, very upset when everything's on the line in conference tournaments and in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it was... I like that the Rams have so much depth because there was probably 3 or 4 minutes left in the game, maybe 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, and like everyone had 3 fouls. Like a couple people had 4 fouls, and it was like, well, if Rob fouls out, like who's? And it's nice that it's like, okay, well, maybe Melvin Johnson will come in, or like there's pieces to put in, but that would suck if there weren't. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but the foul count is not the thing that frustrates me. It's how quickly people get into the bonus.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's really, really frustrating. I mean, and it's incredible because the difference between, like, 8 and 10 fouls and a half is not that great. Like, you know, last year if a game was called close, maybe that would result in 2 more fouls on each team, which wasn't that big of a difference. But now if the game's called close, every additional foul is in the double bonus. And so the effect is even greater than it was last year if a game was called tight. Just because, I mean, just how quickly you get in the bonus. If they wanted to call more fouls and make scoring go up, they should have adjusted the bonus too. Because all those scoring numbers early in the season had nothing to do with better offense.
Yeah.
It's just because teams, there were like something like 12 additional free throws in every single game. Oh, and scoring was up like 10 points or something. You know, like... That's that doesn't make basketball a better game, but I'm also the kind of guy that likes watching UVA and Wisconsin play, so maybe I'm not the best person to ask.
I feel like it hurts a team like the Rams and it helps a team like the Spiders.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what, you know, it is what it is. This was closer, I thought, than maybe the final score was, and especially in the second half, I was like, well, here it goes. It's going to get super close. They're a good team. And it was a great environment and a great game. I won't call it a gym like I called the LaSalle game a gym to watch, but it was, the atmosphere was a gym to participate in.
Absolutely. And I hope they play 3 times this year. There's a good shot. Good shot will happen.
Ram fans should be terrified of that game coming up at the Rob. Yeah. We'll call it the Rob.
Coach Smart has never won there.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So, and that's, when is that?
I believe it's March 6th.
Just a couple weeks away. All right. Do you have anything else to say about Richmond?
Yeah. Do we want to do trivia or a conference? We want to talk about the conference.
Let's talk about the conference first.
Okay. So it's pretty interesting. You know, a couple weeks ago we were talking about how many teams there were that only had one loss. And it's really, really bunched up. And we're in that week now where teams are finally starting to find some separation.
Yeah.
St. Louis, I think... They're my favorite to win at this point.
Including...
Don't get mad at me. Yeah. But they look really good.
Except against George Mason.
Except George Mason took them to overtime. But they're 20-2 overall. They're 7-0. They have one of the top 5 best defenses in the country.
Yeah.
And a really, really good home court. And that just... You know, they have all the pieces. They're going to lose a lot after this year, but I think they really have all the pieces to not only... do really well in the A-10, but to do well in the NCAA tournament.
Do you know who they have left on the schedule?
St. Louis. Okay, so this is one of the interesting things I want to talk about. So St. Louis is number one in the conference at 7-0. VCU is 6-1. George Washington and St. Joseph's are 5-2, and then, you know, everything else falls off below there.
Mm-hmm.
So KenPom does a conference strength of schedule ranking.
Yeah.
And so right now St. Louis is 13 out of 13, and VCU is 12 out of 12.
Yep.
You have to account for the fact that VCU and St. Louis aren't playing themselves, and they're the two best teams. So obviously that's going to affect that weight.
Yeah.
But, you know, VCU, definitely their schedule gets a lot harder from here on out, and St. Louis does it well. It does as well. I mean, they have to come to the Siegel Center for starters, but they also have at St. Joseph's, at LaSalle, versus VCU, at George Mason, George Washington, another game with VCU, Dayton, and UMass left.
Yeah.
So VCU and St. Louis definitely have uphill battles, but I think it's gonna end up exactly like last season with VCU at 13-3. I mean, with St. Louis at 13-3, and VCU at 12-4 right behind them.
Do you know who has the number one conference strength of schedule right now?
Yeah, I can tell you that.
I'm looking at it right here.
Richmond,
yeah.
This week alone, they played at St. Louis and at VCU.
Yep, and they had just played UMass
last
week. And they're right now sitting at 4-3 in the conference.
They're good. They could really, they could be a team that gets one of those 4 byes.
Yeah.
which I think is awesome because the higher seed they are, the more likely we'll get a rematch with VCU and Richmond up in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and man, VCU's upcoming schedule is kind of brutal.
It's very brutal, yes. It's very backloaded, and they have a very tough road schedule because, you know, they had to play at LaSalle, they had to play at Dayton, they have to play at UMass. Mm-hmm. They'll play at St. Louis.
There's not even really... I mean, they play at Fordham, I guess, is the gimme game out of this list, if you would want to call one of them that.
I don't like calling any games that, but... That's probably one of the easier games, and I think probably hosting Rhode Island's one of the easier games left.
Yep.
That's why being there 6-1 right now is so valuable. You want to get ahead.
Yeah.
And build in that cushion because it's going to get really brutal.
And that's what, like, we were talking last night during the Super Bowl, and people were talking about how they were... Oh, it was when we were talking about how is the Super Bowl or is March Madness the quintessential American sporting time? And I was like, March Madness, I think, and... People, then we kind of like meandered off topic about how the college football playoff, people were worried about it, like making the regular season games less important. And I was like, no, you should look exactly at what's happening in the A-10 right now. The regular season games are so incredibly important because they're all going to matter once it gets to Brooklyn, you know?
Yeah, and I think, well, college football, you know, it's going to be 4 teams this year.
Yeah, and so it still doesn't really...
If they go to like an 8-team playoff, I think that enhances... Because right now it's like you just try to do really well and you get to the best pool as possible.
Yeah.
But now there's going to be this really tough battle just to get into the field of 8, you know, which is, you know, maybe some teams will be a little more willing to challenge themselves at the right time.
Yeah.
Or do different things. It'll be interesting to watch how that changes things. But back to the superior sport of basketball.
Yeah.
I guess the last thing I'll say about that is there's still a lot of conference play to shake out. It's an extremely, extremely balanced conference. I mean, St. Bonaventure...
Yeah.
Has some huge wins, and they're still 3-4 in the conference. You know, Dayton, who's really good, is 2-5 in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Mason's 0-7. No one even saw that coming. They're not that bad of a team. It's just someone, on any given night, someone has to lose. And the other interesting thing about the A-10 is how many good defenses there are. So, St. Louis ranks 3rd, VCU ranks 11th, UMass ranks 27th. George Washington ranks 36th. You've got Richmond at 53, LaSalle at 67, St. Bonaventure at 73. Like in the nation.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And that's adjusted for level of competition and the different offenses you play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. If you're a big fan of defense, this is your league.
And some different styles of defense too.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is cool.
Absolutely. I mean, St. Louis and VCU are the opposite in many ways. VCU's all about speeding it up, extending their defense, and St. Louis is kind of like more of one of those Wisconsin UVA teams, like extremely sound physical defense, but let the other team make no mistakes and let the other team just sort of get frustrated playing against this brick wall.
Do you think, to go back a little bit, we talked about how Havoc hasn't really been havocing as much, at least in the way the kind of steals and turnovers. It was very turnover focused early on in the season. Like basically the whole thing thrived off of turnovers. And now the Rams are getting it done in a lot of different ways. Is that the vision? Is that Coach Smart's ultimate vision? Like is he bummed that it's not as turnover based, or is he excited about the prospect of it being more balanced? Or would he just like to see both?
Well, I think he wants to see both. And I don't think it's that the press has been The press has done different things. It's still wearing people out.
Yep.
It's still limiting opponents' abilities to run their half-court offenses efficiently because, you know, now you got the ball in the hands of your secondary ball handler, and you got to come down. It takes a second to, like, get your offensive sets run up. Oh, yeah, but now you're, like, down 10 seconds. So it's still doing those kinds of things effectively. It's still speeding people up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still making a guy like Kendall Anthony work harder than any player should have to work in a basketball game. But they've just been playing really good teams in terms of turnovers. I mean, Duquesne has really, really good guards who, you know, I could go look at the stats. I mean, they're one of the best teams at not turning the ball over. Fordham's the same way. Richmond is the exact same way. So I think it's just the competition they play. I mean, LaSalle's the same. I mean, it's incredible the guards they've already played this season. So I don't think it's necessarily any fault of VCU. It just has to do with the type of teams they're playing against.
Right.
You know, and it's about so much more than steals and forcing turnovers.
Yeah.
And that's important to remember.
And it's they're still getting those steals. It's not like they're...
Yeah, I mean, Toronto ever still had 5 steals.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about the A-10? We looked at the rankings real quick in terms of how KenPom ranks the conferences against each other. And the A-10 sits right after all of the major conferences.
The seven major conferences, yeah.
Just a data point.
I think they're a little higher in the RPI, mm-hmm. but I prefer KenPom. Yeah. You haven't picked up on that yet.
Yeah, you don't like the RPI. It's a handy little... It's a tool, that's all. All right, you want to do trivia?
I suppose so.
It's easy this week.
I hate it when you say that.
All right. Question number one, trivia. Still don't have a saxophone tune jingle to introduce trivia yet, but maybe one day. Question one. Who is the only player to start a game for the Rams and score 0 points this season?
Jordan Burgess.
It is Jordan Burgess. It was this game against uh-huh. Richmond. You got to go back to the St. Louis game on March 13th when Troy Daniels had 0 points.
Yeah, that's when Dwayne Evans face guarded him and he didn't.
Yeah.
He got some shots off, but he didn't see the light of day for 2 hours of basketball.
And I think they lost. That's a loss, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tough to win when St. Troy
Louis
Daniels
just.
And then if you go back a little bit, it's like a rare thing. I wish with all my heart I could have a database of all the stats and I could just ask it what I wanted and get mm-hmm. it back. Instead, you have to click around through Stat Sheet or KenPom a million times to try to find the stuff out. It's awful. But Darius Theus had 0 points against George Washington. Briante Weber had 0 points against Longwood. Teddy Okiefor, who started against Belmont, just seems weird, right? Can that even be right? Who knows? That's what I'm talking about. Like, Stat Sheet. Like, you just have to click around for
it. I think he started.
Did he?
I can't remember why, though.
Was someone injured? Oh, didn't Theus have an injury last year for a second?
Yeah, that was a game that he was injured, but, you know, Briante Weber played the bulk of the minutes and put up pretty impressive stats.
And then DJ Haley started against Memphis, and he had 0 points.
That doesn't surprise me.
So, so it's kind of a rare thing. And Jordan Burgess had a ton of minutes this game. Like, he played a significant amount. All right, question number two. Kendall Anthony dropped 31 points on the Rams. Who were the previous two players to score 30 or more points on BCU?
Tyrone Gone.
Yep, against LaSalle just a couple weeks ago.
And Khalif Watt.
Yeah, with Temple.
And the one before that was Ramon Galloway.
Yeah.
The one before that is some guy from some random team. I'll have to look it up. It's like one that you would not expect.
Right. That's pretty good. Two for two.
Plus some bonus points there, right?
Yeah, definitely. All kinds of bonus points. All right.
This is like, whose line is it anyway?
Yeah.
10 million points for you.
Question number three. Why is Rhode Island called Rhode Island when it's clearly not an island?
I like the geography questions. Is there an island off of Rhode Island? Did they think they were on an island when they landed there?
There's an island off of Rhode Island. So at the mouth of the... I'm not from that part of the country. The Narragansett. Is that right?
I have no idea.
People from Rhode Island are like, get it right. Whatever that is. Let's just call it the Narragansett. We're not even going to go there. Anyway, early explorers Giovanni de Verrazzano in 1524 noted the presence of an island near the mouth of this bay, which he thought looked like the island of Rhodes off of Greece.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one explanation. The second is another explorer was out there in 1610, and he was Dutch, and he passed by the same island and thought it was reddish. And in Dutch, it's Rodelijk Island would be Reddish Island, and so it kind of became Rhode Island.
Huh.
So there you go. There is an island that you sail by if you're near Rhode Island, and that's how it's called Rhode Island.
Lots of sailing up there.
Lots of sailing, yeah.
That's good. I like the geography questions.
Yeah, I like to mix it up a little bit. So that's a good transition, I think, right into Rhode Island. The Rams horn at stake.
Part two of three, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
So they play Thursday and Saturday. It's one of those weeks that basketball players, coaches, and media members all love.
Yeah. a lot of work in these last couple of days of the
week. A lot of work, not much sleep. But they play two teams that VCU struggled against last season, and both of those teams have taken big steps forward this season. Rhode Island's expected to take a really, really big step, but they didn't. They've sort of underperformed expectations. but they're still a much, much better team. So VCU beat them at their place 70-64 last year. And just an ugly game. VCU turning the ball over a lot. I remember it was one of the worst games that they played last season and still won. And they struggled to slow down Rhode Island. But I'm much more optimistic this year. Because it's in the stew,
yeah.
You know, that makes a huge difference for them. And last year the game was, Wednesday night game. I think it was late.
This one's a Thursday night, 7 p.m. tip off.
Yeah. And so Rhode Island's. Here's why I think it's not going to be so bad. On Saturday, they lost to Fordham.
Yeah.
And I just think. No offense to Fordham, but that's going to automatically kind of bump you down a rug in my book.
You're a Fordham hater. That's who took UR to overtime, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Which you think demotes UR severely in terms of power ranking strength.
Yeah, when the CPR... Well, I think...
maybe Fordham's just a little bit better than you think.
John Sevier's really good, and he could put the... If he's having an efficient scoring night, he turns that into a different team. But I just think that... They're not that good in the zone defense, and they don't have any size. They're starting they're starting four guards that are 6'3" or shorter, with 1'6'8" guy there in the middle. So I don't know. But, before that, they beat Dayton. And I mean, their two A-10 wins are George Mason and Dayton.
Yeah.
So, both at home. So I'm pretty optimistic about that game. Ken Palm's even more optimistic than I am. He has them winning 76-63 at the 90% chance of victory.
Who's the guy, the star for Rhode Island that we should keep an eye on?
Xavier Mumford. He's a really great basketball player. He's another great guard, another great senior guard. And let's see who else they have that's really good this year. It's a lot of like different pieces. Dan Harley's doing a good rebuilding job there. He's brought in a lot of like new players from last year. And they're good on the defensive end, but 279th in offensive turnover percentage. They can't shoot. They got no perimeter shooting. So most of their points are going to come from Xavier Mumford, and then outside of that, we'll see.
Yeah. So you're pretty good. You have a high confidence level as well, it sounds like.
A much higher confidence level than I do for the St. Joseph's game.
So they'll play 7 p.m. on Thursday, and then they turn around and... 48 some hours later, they play St. Joe's at St. Joe's at 8 p.m.
Yeah, exactly. And St. Joe's, the team, they're having a good season. VCU had two really great battles with them last year. The first one was a snowy game. VCU's down 4 with 17 seconds.
Yep.
And I believe it was Darius Theus who... Well, Troy Daniels hits the... Troy Daniels is 0 of 9 from the field. And he hits the one that matters. He finishes the game, I think, 1 of 10 from three-point range, but hits the one that matters. Darius Theus, I think, had a nice layup at the end. They force overtime and then win in overtime. And then they played in the second round, but VCU's first game in the Atlanta 10 tournament.
Yeah.
And VCU was playing really well. You remember, this is right after DJ Haley left, so Justin Toyo was getting... I refer to this game as the Justin Toyo game. Justin Toyo was getting more minutes than he had all season. And... VCU's up kind of big, so Justin Toyo attempts a three-pointer, hits it, and then St. Joseph's kind of gets going, and they bring it back. VCU ultimately wins by 3 points. So I like to think that the Justin Toyo game, because his three-pointer made the difference. St. Joseph's scored 36 points in the last 10 minutes in that game.
Wow.
And they've really turned it on here recently in the A-10. They're shooting really well from three-point range.
So they're 5-2.
They're 5-2, and not. I mean, their only bad loss before conference play was to Temple. They were 9-4 in the non-conference, but they lost to Creighton, LSU, and Villanova. So they're doing really well, and their losses are to UMass and Richmond. But they beat UMass and Dayton already, and their 3-point shooting has just been. Really good. It was really good entering conference play. Now it's really, really good, which is an area where VCU has really excelled is 3-point defense.
Yep.
But it's another team with really good senior guards. Langston Galloway, really good. Ronald Roberts is a big man, but then Chris Wilson's a junior, and then Halil Kanasevic. I want to say it's hard to see on the end there. He's 6'8", but he has guard skills. He can shoot some three-pointers. They're a really experienced team, and I think that's a dangerous game for VCU.
It'll be interesting to see what happens because St. Joe's plays St. Louis on Wednesday.
both at home, though. Both games are at home.
Yeah, both games are at home. So they could have a ton of momentum. Is that game going to be on TV? I would love to watch that game. That would be a great game to watch.
I'm sure you can find it on
in
TV.
Prep for VCU's upcoming schedule.
Yeah, so listen to this schedule. I mean, all three at home. But St. Joseph's gets UMass, St. Louis, and VCU in an 8-day span all at home.
Yeah.
They won the first one. You know, they beat Massachusetts. So it'll be interesting to see. And that's a pretty good indicator because UMass is probably the most similar team to VCU in the league. They press most of the game. You know.
And like you said, when we went up to play Dayton, right? Yeah, turn a good game, a good night, into a good week, into a good month, which VCU has done.
They're getting close to that month mark.
Yeah. That was 4 games ago,
10
right?
of 11, yeah.
Yeah.
10 of the last 11.
It's a lot of wins, man.
It's a lot of wins, but got a lot of games to win a conference.
Yeah.
I think this will be a really... I'm gonna say something here. I think...
You're going to say something crazy?
Well, I think if they lose this game, then I really stick to my prediction of VCU's going to finish second in the conference. If they win this game and win against Rhode Island, that puts them in a really good place to compete down the stretch.
Yeah.
Because then you're playing games. Then they have games against the teams with whom they'll be competing. You know, so you don't have to win them all, but you just have to win the right ones.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. You can lose some games as long as you beat St. Louis. You can lose some games as long as, like, you beat UMass. And then all these things shake out, and all of a sudden, you're there on the last day of the season, you know, ready at St. Bonaventure with a chance to win the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I think this is probably the turning point. This is a huge moment for them.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure for this game. And then they travel, looking ahead even a little bit further, though. After the Saturday game against St. Joe's, the Rams will play at George Washington on Wednesday.
No. Home against George Washington.
Home against George Washington.
And then at St. Louis, at UMass.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. But I'm saying if you get through these two games, you're 8-1. You know, winning a good conference, deep conference like this is, you win at home.
Yeah.
You win the road games you're supposed to win.
You steal one.
And you steal one. And so far, I mean, that George Washington loss isn't bad. So far, they've done everything that they need to do. They've won at home. They've won the games they're supposed to. You know, they lost to a good team on the road.
Yeah. I don't know if some of those away games, like that LaSalle game, is a steal or not. But we had talked about walking away from that stretch of Dayton-LaSalle 1-1 would be good. Mm-hmm. We'd be excited about that. And now it's 1-2-3. That's 5 games in a row since George Washington that they've won. So they're putting the pieces together. It's stressful, though.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've proven that they can win in multiple ways, which is going to be really important for them. And this is I keep talking about it, but this is like a tough league for them to play in because the A-10 is known for athleticism. It's known for great guards.
Yeah.
It's like those are two really, really good, two essential tools you need to play against Havoc.
Is that always been true about the A-10, or is that just the current crop of players?
No, it's been that way for a while, because I remember when Chris Mooney got there, he got a lot of flack his first couple years because he wasn't winning games, and he's trying to do this Princeton offense matchup zone thing that he's had a lot of success with now. But people were like, what are you doing? This is like super athletic, get out and run type of league, you know, like, why are you doing this? This isn't how you play in the A-10. It's worked out for him pretty well.
Yeah.
After those first couple seasons. So, I think it's been that way for a good while. But, I mean, I'll be honest, 4 games ago, before they went on that road trip and beat Dayton and LaSalle, I was thinking, man, this team, VCU could finish anywhere between, like, 3, if they play well, and 6th.
Yeah.
You know, and I talked a lot about just getting in that top 4 and you want to get those byes. And, you know, I think they'll get a bye. But now it's 1-4. It's where they're going to finish in there.
Yeah.
So,
well, all right. I had one more thing to talk about. And if you were done, I didn't do a prognosticating. I should have done that.
I was pretty close last time.
You were pretty close.
If he hadn't gotten in foul trouble, he definitely would have gotten 4 blocks.
So yeah. So last week I asked Aaron to prognosticate on one stat, and it was how many blocks would Alonzo Nelson Adota have against VCU, and you said 4, and he had 3, but he did.
He had 3 in the first 10 minutes of the game, yeah. And then he got into foul trouble.
Well, let's do. Can I make one up? Am I smart enough to make one up?
Right. Does it have to end in this week? Like, is the goal to have it be something that happens in the next?
Yeah, week? Yeah. In the next 2 games. And is there one you'd like to prognosticate on while I'm thinking here? What about something? What about? let's do turnovers. How many turnovers will Rhode Island have in the stew?
In the stew?
Yeah.
I think it's time. They haven't had a lot in the past few games. 22.
22, okay.
I think 22 against Rhode Island.
Okay, I'm writing it down. Great, I'm glad I remembered to do that. I did have one quick other thing that I wanted to talk about. Just have you talk a little bit about kind of the arc of Breontae Weber. Because I'm not sure we're at the apex of the arc yet. Man, has it changed from when we started doing this podcast after Puerto Rico? Like,
I mean, his A-10 stats are just incredible. You know, and we talked a lot of, you know, filling the void of Darius Theus and how it's not necessarily turnovers, it's turnover differential. And he's got, I think, he's got 5 turnovers in the last 5 A-10 games.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And he's playing serious minutes. And he's obviously he's getting lots of steals. And then the thing that's really come around in the A-10 play is that he's putting points on the board, both with 3-point shooting. Who saw that coming? 7 of 17 in A-10 play from 3-point range. And that's in a lot of different ways. A couple mid-range jumpers here, free throws. He's the best free throw shooter on the team. So, I mean, he had 14 against Richmond. He had 7 against Fordham. But 12 against LaSalle, 18 against Dayton, 12 against Duquesne, 8 against George Washington, 12 against George Mason. So that's just, he's just doing a little bit of everything, which is what you get with him.
Rebounding too?
Yeah. I mean, he's so athletic that he's a great rebounder for a guard. And every time he rebounds, it's as good as a turnover. Because he's so fast at turning those defensive rebounds into transition offense that it's the same thing as a steal, which is a special skill to have. So it's, you know, you saw games early in the season where he put a lot of points up but not necessarily get a lot of assists, or maybe put a lot of assists up but have no role in offense, or maybe just get a lot of steals, and I think we're finally starting to see all the pieces come together, which is really cool. And I think he's the face and the vocal leader of the team.
Yeah.
In a way that hasn't, I mean, you watch from the press conference, there'll be 3 players, he sits in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he almost answers all the questions, or he delegates them out to like the other guys. That's a change from the beginning of the season.
Awesome.
So it's really exciting. It's awesome that, you know, he has a whole another year.
Yeah.
That just makes me like really excited.
Yeah. I'm the stupid one who loves Jaquan Lewis in a like maybe Jaquan Lewis should be the point guard kind of way. When I remember that was me like 10 episodes ago or whatever, 12 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But clearly that's stupid.
Well, they're really good when they play alongside each other.
Oh, it's awesome to watch.
It's really cool. Yeah, I mean, their best offensive lineup is probably, like, Breontae Weber, Jaquan Lewis, Melvin Johnson as a third guard, and then Trayvon Graham and Javonte Redick.
Yeah.
You know, but they start Jordan Burgess and Rob Brandenburg because of defense. But when those two play with each other, and it's really good because that's really helping Breontae Weber with his 3-point shooting. I think it'd be interesting to go back and look and see how many of those happen with Jaquan Lewis on the floor.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think it's like a 2-point guard lineup, but Jaquan Lewis has shooting guard skills too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he'll hit 3 in a row before you know it.
Yeah. It's exciting to look for. I mean, I'm really happy about this team, but it's like, man, they're going to be all right next season.
Yeah,
I feel way more confident about next season now than I did at the start of the season.
And who's the Javonte Redick replacement? We don't have to talk about this forever, but
yeah, Malachi Cox.
Yeah, which is also exciting.
I think he's going to turn into something scary.
Yeah,
I mean that stat line he had the other night was great. I just think you can't teach physical tools like that, and he's physical enough but quick enough to really excel. You know, and they've got other good guys. I mean, they've got other good big men who will. I mean, it'll be more by committee. It won't be Javonte Redick and then everyone else, which will be a really uneasy feeling because he's been 3 years. He's been the dude, and then even the second half of his freshman year, people were really. I mean, really great play. Look at that Purdue game. I think he had 12 points. Mm-hmm. Later in the season, he started adding in that mid-range jumper, and people were like, "Oh man, whoa, this guy's got some serious skills."
Yeah, the future is bright. I like that the Stew and the fans seem... They're so smart. We have such smart fans, which is cool. They're not always real nice, but they are really freaking smart. And, like it, Moses Know is, like, a universal thing now. Like, Moses Know happens, and then, like, the court gets to hear about it for the next minute or two, which is awesome. Space Cat is, like, a new awesome thing.
Yeah.
And, like, Space Cat kind of gets a standing ovation whenever, like, Space Cat happens, which is great. I was able to hear the DJ this time because
he does a really good job.
It's awesome, and I like my season ticket seats are behind the DJ, so I can't really hear him. And from the press row, I was like, "Oh, this is awesome!" So,
in Wrecking Ball, the band will drop out, and it'll be like just Miley Cyrus, and then come back in, and it's like, yes.
I like the things that get the things that get the Siegel Center amped up are Space Cat. do you want it to be really loud in this room? Here's a Space Cat.
Yeah.
And it's super loud. Or this Miley Cyrus song.
Or when there's a kickball and everyone goes ole, ole, ole.
Yeah.
They do a really good job. I mean, it's cool, I think, that they have a really strong mission of doing new things.
Yeah.
Every game, they just want to try something new, you know. They got a guy on stilts, or some dude's got a pink plastic trumpet, or... You know, a lot of this ideas kind of stuff comes from the Pep Band, obviously, and they, no matter what it is, I feel like they don't want to stop.
Yeah.
You know? It's never like, oh, we've arrived. It really is this, like, insatiable drive for more, 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 which is really cool, you know? I can't wait to see what happens next.
It all feels so very Richmond, very VCU, mm-hmm. like, I just love it. It's awesome. It's great. You should buy season tickets if you don't have season tickets. Go buy them next year. If you can. If you can even do it. Like, you can't even really do that anymore. That was a tangent. I think that's all I had. I was just really stoked. In the same way I was really stoked about the LaSalle game, watching it, and the feeling I got that I had the similar in-crowd fan experience at this game.
And that's one of the best parts. I'll finish by saying that's one of the best parts about the A-10. You just... The number of games where, like... The CAA, a lot of the games were, like, dreadful because it's like, we have nothing to gain in this.
Yeah.
It's, we win this big, or it's close, and we lose, and we all feel terrible.
Right.
Whereas, like, now VCU's playing, it seems like every week they're playing a big game against a good team. And it's like, if they lose, you're going to feel bad, but it's not like, oh man, our chances for an at-large bid are done.
Right.
You know, so it's like, less stressful and more enjoyable, and you can just sort of appreciate the beauty of the game of basketball.
Yeah. That was a nice way to finish. I like that. And we're out. Let's do contact information really quick. If you want to get a hold of us, I'm at Ross Catrow, RossCatrow.
I'm at AW Underground. I'm Aaron Williams. You can follow RVA Ram News at RVA Ram News. Find us on Facebook. There's the Commonwealth Power Rankings. It's all there.
And we talked about this a little bit before, but really go check out the photos. Will Weaver shoots our photos. I think he's at Will Weaver RVA is his Twitter account, mm-hmm. I think. And the photos from the Richmond game were incredible. Like, they're amazing. You need to go look at them and send him accolades because he's doing a really great job.
He does a great job.
And if you're a Spider fan for some reason.
we're sorry.
Adam Williams, no relation. Covers all of our Spiders games for RV News, and he's doing a really great job too. So check out all that stuff, and we will see you back here next week for episode 11.
We got a 4-man basketball team, so
that's right.
If you're a fifth guy, if you're 6'6" or taller and are good at basketball, hit us up and we can start playing some pickup or something.
Yeah, we're looking for a big man.
Thanks for listening. Go Rams.
Kendrick have a dream.
Did you see that George Mason took St. Louis to overtime?
I did.
In Chaffetz.
I know. What does it mean?
It means that St. Louis has won a lot of games in a row.
And it's bound to happen. I don't think I believe it.
Same thing happened to UMass.
Yeah.
You just... I believe that. There just comes a point when...
You can't win anymore.
Lose. Unless your coach is John Wooden or Bobby Knight, there comes a point where your team just can't win anymore.
To Mason?
That's true.
I mean, sure, like lots of teams, but...
Zona lost to Cal. Not that Cal's that bad.
Mason.
They're good. They're talented.
They have the pieces, maybe?
Yeah.
They're trying to put them together.